This week, we're talking about Toyota's new high-performance 4-banger and a new-era Tokyo Drift, plus a resto mod of a DTM icon, some huge news for Cadillac racing, and how F1 could bring back the V8. But first, Leno's Law hits the paper shredder, sort of. Welcome to the Big Three. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's the only automotive news show you need to listen to. My name is Nolan Sykes. Joining me this week, Max Maddox.
Hello.
And Justin Freeman.
What up?
Bart and Joe are both on vacation, serendipitously. So, hello. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. Max, I'll ask you first, how was your weekend? Did you get up to anything?
I did get up to anything, yeah.
You told me you have found a car that you are looking to purchase.
Yeah.
But there are some strings attached.
Yeah, so I did. I looked at a car this weekend. And I will say, I've been toying with the idea of getting a new daily driver due to the fact that my newest car is 26 years old.
Mm-hmm. It could almost qualify for Leno's Law.
Yes.
Yeah, so I've been driving my E39 540i wagon for, 5 years now.
For a while.
I am very sentimentally attached. It's got 190,000 miles. I'm just kind of getting worried about it. I'm driving a lot.
You're going through window regulators every other week.
I have two window regulators out right now, and the sunroof doesn't work. Uh-huh. So it's just getting to the point where, like, the whole left side of my car doesn't roll down anymore.
Wow.
And I will, That's I actually nice. Already had a door panel off from another window regulator replacement job, and then it just failed. So anyway, point is, I'm just kind of, like, ready to move on from my beloved wagon. And so I've been eyeballing Cayennes.
For years, mind you. Ever since Max has ever talked about looking at cars, he's been talking about Cayennes.
I like the Cayenne. In particular, right now, I'm looking at the 958, which is the second generation Cayenne. And these are kind of like in that range now where they're like, you can still buy them from like the first or second owner. So they've been maintained.
Buy the dip.
Exactly. Now's the dip. They've been maintained by like Porsche dealers and everything. And they're in the, I would say like probably like the 15 to 25 range for like a pretty good daily driver. And in particular, the diesel is of interest to me because we're talking about a turbo diesel V6. This was like the Dieselgate era car. And there's like a cult following behind them and they're pretty rare, but you can find them and they like tow like crazy. So anyway, the point is I found one on Craigslist, which I still use because I do believe there are deals to be found on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And I found a Cayenne that was priced like probably, I would say like a third of what it should, a diesel 2013. And it says it has fueling issues. Mm-hmm. So I've done some research and I talked to the nice German woman who's selling it and it has like the fuel pump basically exploded. Oh. So, which is something that can happen to them. And so when it explodes, it sends shrapnel through the entire system.
Oh.
And the whole fuel system needs to be replaced. So we're talking, obviously, the pump, the lines, the rails, injectors, all that stuff generally needs to be replaced. And a dealership will charge like $20,000.
Okay.
So she's like, this, I don't want this car anymore.
Yeah.
I have done some research.
Uh-huh.
And I do believe that this is a DIYable job.
Uh-huh, okay.
So I could get behind the wheel of a Cayenne for a significant percentage or a significant discount of what it should be sold for.
Wow. But at the cost of your probably mental well-being.
Maybe a couple of elbow grease and a little bit of time on Rock Auto, punching in some part numbers.
Do you tow stuff?
Not at all.
Yeah.
So, I don't own anything that could be towed.
They're all too low.
Could you just find like a V8 one and just be happy with that?
Yeah.
Instead of like embarking
on that 40 to the gallon, man.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking like, granted, it's been kind of choked a little bit with the Dieselgate emission stuff, but like 35 miles to the gallon. And also,
pretty amazing.
I don't know. I've just heard like the reliability is a little bit better. You don't have like the same transfer case issues or whatever, but. I've never owned a diesel car.
Okay, well, best of luck to you on that, Max. Justin, how about you? What's going on in Justin's world? A little catch-up for Justin. We haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I was driving across country for about a month.
Yes.
Look out for that video.
That should be coming out soon. About a month or so, right?
Yeah, I've got a baby on the way, so I've been
crazy
prepping for that. I moved. I went to my girlfriend's great uncle's funeral, who's a huge car guy.
Okay.
So they had all his cars lined up at the funeral.
Wow.
It was a celebration of life.
21 car salute.
Yeah, so kind of.
I've never heard of that before, but that makes so much sense.
It was so cool because he was just like, he was known as the car guy in the family. Mm-hmm. He helped everyone, but he had like Bel Airs, Ford Deluxes. I mean, he had everything. Model A's, Model T's, like
vintage stuff.
But you would think, you know, because his neighbor complained, right? So his neighbor complains, city comes after him. He's got to get rid of a bunch of stuff. You think junkyard. That's the first thing you think. Oh, they don't want to look like... All of these things were pristine, like fully restored from scrap to just show quality. Mm-hmm. Like these things could be at the Peterson kind of nice. Wow. And for someone to complain about that, it's kind of crazy. But he's got a lot of stuff for sale. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go to the house and check it out.
Okay. What about your weekend, Nolan?
We're competing at Bonneville this year, which is in 2 weeks. The Salt Flats there during Speed Week. And this weekend, I went up to Atascadero. We tested the car out at the Santa Margarita Ranch Airstrip, which is where like Hoonigan did like this versus that and stuff.
Yeah, cool.
So we took the car out. My dad did a bunch of work on the top of the roll cage to make the car more comfortable for me because it was built for someone much smaller than me. So
right, you were pretty squinched in there.
I was squished in there. It was not pleasant at all. But now I'm much more comfortable, which is very confidence inducing. But we still have some tuning to do on the engine, but really excited. We're going to try to hit 200 and then try to go for the record in our class, which is like 212.2 something.
Cool.
Really excited.
Have you been 200 yet, Nolan?
Not yet.
What's the fastest you've gone?
186 in our Roadster is what I went last time we were out there. And then when Max and I went to Germany last year, I did 174 in a Golf R on the Autobahn.
Wow.
That thing felt so stable, though. That was crazy.
Yeah.
It was really crazy just seeing the cars that we were passing. Like, I've never experienced how
just making
like
them
such
look like they were standing still is crazy. Bizarre. Yeah. So. That's cool. That was fun. But yeah, so if you're going to be out at Bonneville, say what's up. We'll be out there. We'll be shooting a video. That's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. So
finally, because it's been like 2 years. It's rained out, right?
Yeah. I've been four times now. I think four times. Two of them got rained out. And then the 2023, it was sunny and good. Or it had been rain. It rained like the week before and they only had one course open. Then after that, they decided to move the event up a week, I think. And to avoid the rain, and that's been working out for him. So hopefully we have some good weather this year, and it's gonna be great. I just love the salt, dude. It's different.
200 club.
Yeah, that should be fun too. Yeah. So yeah, to get into the 200 mile per hour club, you actually have to set a record above 200 miles an hour. They also have a 300 mile per hour and 400 mile per hour.
Four?
Yeah. There's a couple. Oh. That one's much smaller, but 300. That's my life's goal is to go 300 at some point. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, and then I'll be happy. Yeah.
Then I'll be happy.
You're two-thirds of the way there.
Yep. I know, right? Leno's Law is one step closer to reality, but recent changes have left some enthusiasts feeling disappointed, with many going as far to call the law dead or gutted. Let's see what they're talking about. For those of you who aren't familiar with Leno's Law, it's a bill that was introduced to the California State Legislature a few months ago with backing from Jay Leno. Hence the name. That would have been convenient if they just called it that without his involvement.
Whoa.
The bill's original proposal would have exempted all cars in the state that are 35 years old and older from smog checks. The bill recently cleared the state Senate, but several key changes have been made to the original law. The smog exemption for cars 35 years old and older does remain, but with two major caveats. One, the car in question must have historical plates, and two, have collector's insurance.
Yeah, I've always wondered about this because right now it's like there's a hard line in the sand where I think it's like 1975.
Yes, and pre-76, and yeah.
And that doesn't like move. So, no. Like,
so this is rolling. This is a rolling 35 years. So as, you know, 35 years from now and then next year it'd be 35 years from then instead of like the hard.
Which is how most states do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how the 25 import rule works. In North Carolina, there's a 20-year and a 25-year.
Oh, really?
So at 20-year, you only get a safety inspection. They're like, hey, keep it on the road, keep it safe, whatever. 25-year or 30-year, they literally just hand you plates. If it's insured, they're like, good luck. You know? Like, hey, all right, cool. You got insurance. We're just, here you go.
Wow.
You can get, like, vintage tags or historical or whatever for 25 years, but at 30, they don't care.
What was...
what's the purpose of the historical tags? Do you know?
Historical, I mean, it's essentially saying like, oh, this is a piece of history. It's only on the road for a limited amount of time. It's the same thing as what this is proposing. I only drive it 3,000 miles a year. And if you even go over that 3,000 miles, they'll get mad at you. Like, you'll lose your tags. I don't know how they check. But I believe there's a value system, but I don't think the value system actually matters. As long as it's 25 years old, you don't drive it as much, you can get the historical tags.
Huh. So who gives those out? Like, was that at the discretion of somebody at the DMV?
It's at the DMV, yeah.
You can just apply for them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so we'll talk about that. California historical plates don't set mileage limits, but collector car insurance typically does, usually within the 3,000 to 5,000 mile range. I did some checking on Hagerty this morning, and I think they are like on a case by case basis. They won't really necessarily tell you. It also, I think, the value of the car itself.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a Ferrari 250 GT that you're planning on driving around, your rate is probably going to be higher, and those mileage limits are probably going to be greater because it's such an expensive car. But if you have like an EF Civic Hatch, I would imagine the limits and the price probably wouldn't be that high compared to some other.
Yeah, Hagerty is cool because I think you can actually tell them what you value it at. They don't have to value it. I think it's worth this. So then they'll just adjust based on.
And are they checking to make sure your car's stock? Like, can you have a historical plate on a car that has like an engine swap?
From what I'm aware of, the DMV does not check for stock.
Because that's the whole point.
Because think of an old Ford, you probably swap the motor, you know? Like, they're not going to judge that.
Yeah, you know, I've never actually looked into that.
Because, like, if I care about smogging my old car, it's because it's not exactly a most stock and smoggable car. Right.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, as a guy that owns everything over 25 years, actually most of my cars are in their 40s, you know, it's like, yeah, smog sucks.
But because smog, they're exempt from smog, I don't think the swap would matter.
Right.
Yeah. So
you just gotta get them plates.
But now you can't drive it.
Can't drive it that far. Like, okay.
I mean, the track is 2.5 hours away, man.
Yeah, but it's only like 70 miles. Also, if you're probably trailering your car, right?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Not us scumbags.
I would definitely trailer my car. So the original argument in favor of Leno's Law was that old, high polluting cars were mostly driven by collectors, not driven often, and that they represented an insignificant number of cars on the road. Changes to the law now ensure that smog-exempt cars are not daily drivers. I remember when this news kind of dropped, it was like last week or 2 weeks ago, like people were going crazy on Instagram, but like I think it's a pretty fair compromise, honestly.
Well, like, yeah, because what they don't want is people like us finally getting something that's smog-exempt and then just driving it every day and saving a bunch of money because of a new law. It's like that's what they're trying to avoid.
I think reality, though, like, would keep that from happening anyway. Like, how many people do we know? First of all, first question. How many people do we know that drive cars older than 35 years old every single day?
Heber.
Okay. Heber, yes.
But
that thing breaks down all the time. And that's my second point of the argument. It's like, these cars are old. I don't care how well built they are. We've messed with some really expensive, nicely done builds in the past that have broken down like immediately. Oh, like these boutique cars, I think the reality of them being so, or the reality of a lot of engine swap cars is that they aren't the most reliable in the world, right? Yeah.
Dude,
we can all agree on that, right?
You imagine a 350Z a couple years from now, historical plates, LS swap, just driving around.
I know an LS swapped vintage Z. Get some plates on it. Huh. Yeah.
Vintage Z, dude.
Yeah, that's what year is your, that's a is two, low Z?
304?
I think so.
Oh, it's close.
Yeah, yeah, another
God,
decade.
It's close.
It'll be good. Oh, wow.
Wow. Old.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's pretty fair compromise. And, you know, no bill gets through any legislature without changes being made to it. And especially, I mean, instead of like bemoaning the loss of a law or something like that, like, I think we should be happy that it's made it through anyway. Like, the exemption made it through. That's great.
Yeah.
That would have killed it if it was like, actually, sure, you can register your car, but it can't, you know, it still has to go through smog. Like, that would totally be contradictory to what the whole goal was. But that made it through, and I think that's worth celebrating.
And the real win here is getting a rolling date.
Mm-hmm. That's sick.
California used to have one until, I believe it was Schwarzenegger that changed to 76. Because there was a 30-year rule that I was reading before moving here, and I was like, but someone told me that's not real anymore. It's actually just locked on 76.
Wow, thanks, Arnold.
Yeah.
Arnie, the governator. I always forget that he was our state's governor.
He governated us.
Kind of weird.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
Sung Kang, who you may know as Han from the Fast and Furious franchise, is making a new drifting movie.
Whoa.
According to Kang, the movie is called Drifter. Much of the film is going to be shot live at drift events across the country. It's supposed to capture car culture in a real and authentic way. Some stars of the film that have been announced. One, James Pumphrey, along with Adam LZ, Brian Scotto, and Rutledge Wood. What do you guys think?
Well, sounds like F1.
I think it'll be better than F1, honestly.
I haven't seen it yet, but I know they filmed it at actual F1 races, which kind of built the authenticity of it. So if it worked for them, it should work for
this. Probably the only authentic part of that movie, to be honest. I'm not a fan of the film, but I think this will be good.
Most car people are like, yeah, it was all right.
Well, look, I thought the racing was really good.
Yeah.
And I think that's what matters most. But everything else, I would, anyway.
Yeah, most enthusiasts I've heard. Yeah, but anyway, I think this is awesome. You have a lot of the big heads of all car culture these days, of the last decade, I would say. I mean, Rutledge has been in everything.
Yeah,
you know, Adam LZ is huge right now. Brian Scotto and Hoonigan, and then James and Donuts. So it's like, you can't really go wrong with that list.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I'm surprised Amelia Hartford's not on there.
Probably will be.
But Formula Drift competitions, though?
That's interesting.
It's very interesting.
You think of it like Tokyo Drift, and it was all about like street, the forbidden toge racing and whatnot. So I imagine that'll be a part of it. But it's cool, though. I don't know. Sung Kang's like a big, like, he's in the scene, I feel like, more very than much. A lot of the other actors from Fast and Furious. And it's cool to see him, like, you know, making this love letter.
I think car movies are kind of coming back around, you know, F1 obviously this year, but then Duster on HBO Max, it got canceled. It's not getting renewed, but a lot of great cars in that, a lot of great chase scenes in that show.
Twisters.
Nice.
Twisters was, yeah.
The Dodge ad.
Yeah, it was a Dodge ad pretty much, but
good dodges.
Yeah, very good dodges in that one. Yeah, that was actually, that's a sick car movie, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to build a storm chasing car.
Yeah.
I think amateur storm chasing is one of those things that is just like, shouldn't do it. It's a bad idea, but I just love the idea of going out.
Did you see that proposal picture that the couple got in front of the tornado?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got like the lightning going off around and everything.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's so cool. I wonder if you could buy a used storm chasing car. Probably not around
here.
I'm
sure. I'm sure you could, though.
Yeah. Oh, I'm. Probably, yeah.
Can't be that hard to build them.
A car that can survive a...
You need those, like, hydraulic tornado drills to, like, anchor you to the ground.
Yeah. Is that real?
Is that...
Yeah.
They do that for real?
Yeah.
Huh.
That's crazy. I didn't
you
know
You never
that.
Watch those videos? You hear, like, a... Nah. It's them trying to anchor into the ground.
I only watch Mr. Beast and Channel 5.
Yeah.
My
wow.
views are strange.
It's a really weird juxtaposition.
Yeah. There. Both sides, dude.
No middle ground.
All right, yeah. So, tangentially related to this drifter news, Han's RX-7 from Tokyo Drift just sold for $1.2 million.
Wow. Veilside RX-7.
Yeah. Wow. Was it the picture car, like the one he drove, or was it just one of them?
I would assume so. Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, because there's a lot of copycats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that body kit blew up, and there's so many of them out.
Yeah, I like the Veilside kit.
It'd be hilarious to get, like, a knockoff Veilside kit and make it work on that, like, second-gen Ford Taurus that has the RX-7 yes. taillight on it.
I've always wanted to build one of those Impalas into an R30.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I've always wanted to do that. Because you get the supercharged one.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah. Why not? It's still fun.
Supercharged 3800.
I know. I love
six.
Oh, yeah. We had one of those around here for a while. The Buick.
Did we?
Oh,
not
yeah. Supercharged.
Not supercharged. Right? No, just yeah. the 38. Yeah.
Forgot about
we
that.
We killed right? it with blood.
Yeah. Well.
Rumors have been flying for almost a year about Toyota's new high-performance four-cylinder engine, and Toyota engineers are finally talking about it. Recently, German magazine Automotor und Sport sat down with Toyota engineers who confirmed the 400 to 450 horsepower G20e from the GR Yaris M concept was a sneak peek at what's to come. The engineers also said that with a larger turbo, quote, more than 600 horsepower is easily possible.
Damn.
Finally.
What you think about that? How you like them apples?
I like them good.
You know, I can't wait to see it because as impressive as the three-cylinder is, they're blowing up. Yeah. People keep popping them. So, yeah, you're cranking all this horsepower out of these smaller motors, but how strong are they? That's what I'm interested to see. I'm happy this is happening. And then there was something about how thick the bore is. Like, you can just keep boring them out kind
we'll
of thing.
So, we'll get there. Like the Land Cruiser.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Zach won't shut up about that.
Mm-hmm. Sure I won't. Wonder if this has, like the 2JZ has the girdle. For the main caps, I wonder if right. this utilizes something similar.
I would hope so. Yeah. This, I mean, hey, lighter car, lighter engine, more power. I mean, you can't really complain.
The new engine has potential to be the most powerful four-cylinder ever fitted into a production car and could be the most versatile engine swap for the next generation of enthusiasts. Why is that? Well, the engine is designed for both longitudinal and transverse layouts. So you can, you know, do a rear-wheel drive, a car or a front-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, mid-engine maybe. Mm. And engineers say it'll be highly tunable and that they, quote, left enough space between the cylinders so that the engine can be bored out considerably.
Oh, wow. Cool.
There you go.
That's so you think cool. this will be in the Mr. 2?
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Or, you know, if they ever do another flagship sports car.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Redo one of them currently maybe. And get rid of another brand that's associated with it.
Yeah, maybe they could do something like that. That's what I would imagine. Yeah, but yeah, the MR2.
Yeah.
Because that's been kind of like...
That's been hinted at for a while.
600 right? horsepower mid-engine Toyota.
I would
sounds sick.
Yeah, that sounds
dangerous.
Yeah, it does.
Hey, we put the engine as far away from you as possible, just in case.
Oh my God, Deal and I drove a Ferrari Mondial last week. Yeah. And, that video will be coming out in a few weeks. It was a fun one. But, dude, they were not great at, like, insulating the engine bay. It got hot in that car.
Right. Really?
Yeah. Were your feet to the side?
Oh, yeah.
I hate that.
I didn't think it was too bad, to be honest, but Deal, being a taller guy, it was much harder for him. Yeah.
And it's slow.
And it's not fast. Yeah. You really had to, like, really ring it out. Then it's like once it hit 5,000 RPM, then the power really started coming in.
I see. Yeah.
Fun video. Keep your eye out for that.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
New engines are also coming for Formula One.
Oh.
Next season, F1 cars will be leaning even more into hybrid power, but it could be short-lived. That's right. Last week, FIA President Mohammed Ben Sulayem proposed reintroducing V8s, this time powered by synthetic fuel, before the end of the decade, and it appears to be gaining some traction. The hybrid era has been under constant fire for its uninspiring engine sound and a lack of, quote, purity.
Mm.
F1 has historically pioneered technology for road cars, and using this synthetic fuel could be a natural step to take for the sport.
Purity and synthetic don't go together.
They're probably alluding to that, like what the Porsche e-fuel thing was a couple of years ago that we did a video on, where they're creating gasoline that's molecularly comparable to what you would get out of fossil fuels, but it's made by, like them basically synthesizing carbon and hydrogen and making the hydrocarbons themselves.
They were using synthetic racing fuel already. Or
Well, I know there is one brand that helps with F1. I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called like O2 or something. It's just a big circle. Zero fuel. Yeah, they were at the Peterson. They were very nice, and they seem really stoked about what they're doing. And I imagine it's the same thing Porsche was trying to do, but they're kind of past it.
Huh.
Maybe that's what they're going to run. I don't really know. But what is the purity that F1 seems... I'm not an F1 guy, it sounds so, like, to me, what is the purity that's missing?
I feel like it's that raw sound of, like, a super high revving V8 or what have you.
I would assume that's what people would talk about when it comes to that. Yeah, it's just like I started watching F1 in 2014 when they switched over to the V6s. And, the sound has always been pretty underwhelming. Granted, I've never seen an F1 race in person before, so it might sound better in person, but even still, from people I've talked to, it's not quite as impressive. You know, they do like those, they'll do like demo laps with vintage F1 cars that have your V10s or V8s or whatever, and it's like, oh shit, that's
just
the sound right
the fuel
there.
Of what you want.
Yeah.
And this is what we could have.
Yeah, I know, right? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
You know? But a few months ago, Salim's proposal to return to V10s was shot down, but manufacturers are much more open to V8s, as most manufacturers have production car designs that they can work from utilizing a V8 engine. Salim seems eager to make it happen, saying he would like to implement the new engines as soon as 2029, which is crazy because we're switching to new power plants next year in 2026. So it'd be like 3 years of that and then totally changing something else. The teams have been working on these new power plants for a while now, and then they'd have to immediately start working on something else, basically. So the F1, the teams themselves are very powerful within the sport, and I just don't see them wanting to make that change as soon as this guy is proposing.
But like they did say, most manufacturers have a V8.
Yeah.
That they can work off of. It's not like they have to start from scratch.
McLaren themselves, they use a twin-turbo V8 in most of their cars. Ferrari, I believe, has a V8 in their mid-engine cars.
Cadillac
coming in, yes. F1 is already super popular. I don't know if changing these engines is necessarily going to boost the popularity, if that's what their concern is, you know, by getting more people. So most of these races that happen every season, like the Austin gets sold out pretty much every year. I mean, a couple of years ago, you had like 300,000 people there at the track.
Yeah.
Crazy. Over the race weekend. To my knowledge, like most of the races sell out, which is in stark contrast to like 10 years ago when that wasn't really the case, especially in the US. So I don't know. If they're trying to attract more manufacturers, maybe, but like you already have Cadillac coming in. Also, they like didn't want Cadillac to come in for like a few years, and then then it changed. The situation changed, and now they're back. So I don't know.
I think it's less of a trying to make it more popular and more just trying to make it more fun. You know?
Yeah, maybe a more visceral experience at the track that could certainly help. Like when we went to NASCAR, dude, hearing those things go wide open. I mean, around the entire complex you're walking around, it's just like ringing in your ears. That's how loud these cars are.
The jet cars we had at our drag strip, they ran twice. And it was just like, this is the best thing ever.
They should put those on the F1 cars.
Yes, do it. Yeah. Put a ramp in there, too.
You wouldn't. Cowards.
Cadillac is joining Formula One next year, and hopefully this past week was a sign of some success to come. Cadillac won its first WEC event with a 1-2 finish at the 6 Hours of Sao Paulo. This is the first time the team has won an event since joining the World Endurance Championship in 2023. It's the first race of the year not won by a Ferrari as well. Cadillac now jumps to second in the manufacturer championship.
Hell yeah.
Cadillac stated after the race that their ultimate goal remained winning at Le Mans. So great job, Cadillac.
Shout out, Cadillac. Yeah,
shout out.
This is that really cool, like,
yeah,
enclosed capsule, like prototype car,
where
the fender covered thing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar to the car they race at IMSA, which everybody loves. Like, it does the hybrid to get out of the pit,
and then
yeah. Cool, yeah,
they put that in Forza.
Did they? Nice. Can you do that?
I believe so. I think they simulated. You can't pull out the pit; it does it all the time. Oh,
gotcha. Nice. AMG co-founder Hans Werner Albrecht has created one of the coolest resto mods we've ever seen. Albrecht's team, HWA Engineering, has taken a Mercedes 190E and transformed it into a modern DTM homologation special. Here's the car, gentlemen. Pretty sweet.
So this is a homologation, like...
It's a
made-to-order build kind of thing, or
I think they're building like 100 of these things, but it's a tribute to the DTM 190E Evo. Was it 2.3 something? It's got a long-ass name.
Very long name.
The DTM one.
The DTM car.
It was developed for rally racing. That's why Cosworth was involved with building the engine. And then they switched over to road racing over there in DTM. But none of the original like cars that Mercedes originally built for that series back then are being sacrificed for this build right here. HWA is taking just an old 190E chassis.
None of the mill.
They basically tear it all apart.
Buy the body kit, yeah.
So, yeah, this is, like, totally bespoke. They take a 190E chassis, strip it completely down until it's just basically the unibody. They even, like, rebuild the subframes at the front and I believe the rear to be safer in a crash. Mm. They had some crash test footage with the original car and, like, a problem with that original 190E, I mean, being of the time that it was designed, like, your feet usually get pretty injured in a frontal crash. What they do is redesign the front end so it has, like, more crumple zones in the subframe if you were to get into, like, a pretty big accident. Keeps the driver safe. It's also got a full roll cage. It has a full carbon fiber body, wide body conversion. I love the looks of the fenders on these things. They look super cool. It's got wind tunnel developed aerodynamics and a 3-liter twin-turbo V6 making over 450 horsepower. The front axle is also moved forward to make the car a true front mid-engine design for that perfect 50-50 weight balance.
Wow.
Guys, it also costs $865,000.
That's it? That's
gotta pay to play, baby. Gotta pay to play. Is this
that's going pretty
when you're looking, sorry, when you're looking up Cayenne videos and stuff like that, do people in those videos say, look, it might be an expensive car to maintain, but hey, you gotta pay to play.
Gotta pay to play. That's the P car way.
You gotta is that what they say? Okay, because I'm also looking at a upscale German SUV.
Oh my goodness, Nolan.
To replace the truck with. I'm probably not gonna do it, but every video that I watch about it, that's what they say. Oh yeah, it's like kind of pricey to maintain, but hey, you gotta pay to play.
So is this gonna actually be raced, or is this just a tribute to the homologation special?
Well, you know, considering Hans Werner Alfrecht's background, I'm sure that some of these customers will race this car. I mean, it is like a race car. Like I said, it's got a roll cage.
Yeah. So we're full body. We're talking about a Singer Gunther Works situation here.
That 22B Subaru that was a ProDrive started making.
Yeah, ProDrive. Yeah.
But this is actually pretty sick. This is made by Mercedes though.
No.
Okay. No. So
it
this
doesn't
is his,
have a Mercedes badge.
This
on
is
it.
Just using
Mercedes HWA's.
Okay, I see.
His company. Hans von Alfrecht's company, HWA. Totally.
Oh, he's the A in AMG? Okay, yeah, wow.
Yes.
Alfrecht.
Otherwise, it would have just been MG and they would have got sued.
I think it's Alfrecht. Wow. Alfrecht Melcher, right? Melcher? And then Gosbach. But yes, it's not a Mercedes. It's a HWA. Yeah, like you said, though, Singer-esque in its
oh, man, dude.
Implementation.
We're so, like, in the timeline, not even that far away from seeing the carbon fiber G37s, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm
That'll
serious.
Probably happen, yeah.
Well, there is a full conversion kit for G35s to G37s, isn't there? To turn them into, like, a supercar?
I'm talking about, like, the Singer-level
the
company
Vader.
That sells
the
a $1 million. The Vader, yeah.
The Joker drives.
And Shaq.
And Shaq.
Oh we have God. this old thumbnail because we did a D-list years ago on I don't remember what I think it was celebrity cars and we knew that Shaq had a Vador.
That's
so
hilarious.
I found this stock image and it's clearly the Joker driving it and I arrowed to the Joker and I put Shaq. And that's still on YouTube. You can look it up.
That's hilarious.
YouTube.com/donut.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
We're
not just a podcast channel.
That's really funny. Anyway, carbon fiber Vador, that'd be hilarious.
But yeah, full carbon G37.
Yeah.
Or like a Aztec or something, you know? Like, I don't know.
Nah.
You never know, dude. All these weird cult vehicles. There's an F-250 long bed that's full carbon.
Oh,
oh yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Did you see the new Subaru EV called Uncharted?
I did see that. It comes with a free PS3.
Does it really?
No. Yeah.
Where'd you find so many?
That'd be hilarious. Yeah, right. Nolan North voices the navigation system. That'd be cool.
Wow.
Uncharted. Troy Baker. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Your homie? Your colleague.
We worked with both of them on Dirt 5.
Yeah, that's
5.
Right.
Yeah, that was really cool. Nolan North signed my copy of Uncharted 2.
Wow.
Very cool.
He's everybody, though.
He is everybody.
Yeah. Superman.
Related to Mercedes, I watched this YouTube video of a guy who goes to junkyards and like films interesting cars there, and he stumbles upon this Mercedes that he's like filming, and he's like, oh, this is pretty nice. And then he's like slowly realizing, like, wait a second, I think this is my old car. And he's like uncovering the fact, he's like, no, there's no way. And then he like opens the cup holder and he's like, I built this cup holder. And so he's discovering that this car he sold 5 years back has wound up in the junkyard, and it's just been like beaten to shit. And wow. Yeah.
Have you ever had that happen to you?
Never, no.
It's happened to me. I found an old, my college project E36, where we custom made a wide body and manufactured it and everything, was our industrial design project. It was four of us in on the same project, so we couldn't agree to where it would go, so we just sold it to some kid. And I would say 3 or 4 years later, found it on Marketplace, and I was just like, it looks like my old car. And then, like, messaged the guy, and he sent me seat like pictures of the seats, and like the one tear had just gotten slightly more torn. Dude. I was like, dude, that's the same car.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
In our garage this weekend, I was like, my dad has this old Greaves motorcycle frame, because my dad's cousin's super into Greaves motorcycles, this old British like trials bike company. But same thing happened to him. Like, he had this, he bought this bike in like the late 60s and then sold it, and then his cousin decades later like bought this frame from this other guy and was like looking at it like, wait a minute, Scott drilled through the frame here to attach a gas tank and stuff like that, and it was his frame. So now my dad has it back in the garage. So,
wow. Yeah. Nice. That's
wild. I had an old cop car, the Taurus EcoBoost that I bought super cheap, and I sold it because I was kind of like, I didn't really like driving it. Just like the energy
they're fun in a straight line, and then it just feels like a boat the rest
of it. Yeah. But anyway, I sold this to some kid, and it showed up on Facebook Marketplace like within a year, and turbos had blown up, and he wasn't easy on it. I'm really glad I got rid of it.
Yeah.
And somebody else bought it, and then they were selling it for like way more.
Really?
So, one of those like cop car like flipper dudes, like that's their thing.
I have another thing about this. So, if you can't afford $800,000, you can actually just buy a base 190E and put the Evo kit on it. They do make that. And another DTM like homologation race car kit popped up on Marketplace recently. It's really sick. But it's like $8,000 for the kit. Because it's full carbon and everything.
1% of the cost.
Right.
Of this
thing. Yeah. So take your shortcuts. You know,
and they have this tape now that just looks like carbon fiber, so you can just stick that all over your car, and you don't need to get the whole carbon fiber body.
Yeah, dude.
Huh. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's a good little hack.
Yeah. That's why we are into the cars the way we are.
That's right.
Singer's about to go bankrupt.
That's our show, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Give us a like, follow, and review on the platform of your choice. You can follow us at Donut Podcast. Follow Justin at
Justin Freeman.
And Max at
Max Maddox.
And me at Nolan J. Sykes. Follow our other podcast too, Past Gas. This week is our part two of our history on Porsche. We talk about Porsche becoming Porsche. We talk about the 356, the origins of the 911, and Porsche's first Le Mans win. It was a fun one. Go check us out there. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.